Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, yeah, I love that podcast show. Oh, BS and beer is the place to go to get all the Saints news. Hell yeah, podcast show. Na 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 na. Hey, gotta love that podcast show. Na na.
Now, recording live, it's the BS and Beer Podcast crew with your host, David Romero.
Welcome in another week, another edition. It's the BS and Beer Podcast crew recording live from our new studios at Meat House Fork. Today, I have Heath Elson-San, Wesley Coleman with me. We're going to talk about the New Orleans Saints as we do every time we get together. The Saints lose 32-29 to the Kansas City Chiefs. And in a game that, I don't know, man, the end score doesn't seem to truly reflect what actually happened. There are some things that was, at least from my perspective, extremely encouraging, but there were also some things that are a little worrisome. So let's bring in Heath and Wesley. Heath, I'll start off with you. Let me just ask you this question in general. 32 Kansas City, 29 New Orleans Saints. Did the game feel like it was that close?
No. In fact, I'm shocked and relieved that it wasn't any uglier than that, at least in the final score. You know, if you watch the game, it was still pretty ugly. But, I think especially if you go look at all the statistics and all, you would assume that the score would be much different than it was.
Well, the irony in it is during the game, I kind of felt like you when I looked up and we were just rolling into the fourth quarter. I didn't have the feeling of, man, we have just enough time to make a comeback. It was more like, man, there's a lot of time on that clock for us to get rolled up. And now before I start sounding so negative, my concern, I was actually extremely happy with the way the defense played. I mean, considering what they went up against, I was extremely happy. The offense to me was problematic. So before I get too deep into the weeds here, Wesley, let me get your outlook on the same question, 32-29.
Yeah, I mean, it's really hard to not start reflecting on a Saints game most of the time by saying, how did Drew Brees play? Because he's been our superstar for so many years. And so when I just immediately, my first thing is thinking about how he played, this is 32-29. This game should have been a blowout for Kansas City. If you look at in a box, just how Drew Brees played, like you said, impressed with the defense, they played great. And then you factor in that they played 98 plays, six of them gone by penalty. So they 92 official plays, and that they didn't play worse. I mean, this is a game that after watching the first quarter, I was like, our defense is going to be dead in the fourth quarter. And they still kept playing that many plays. I'm impressed with the defense, how they played, but then when you factor in the extra things of how many plays they played, and they still, you know, did really well up until the very end of the game.
Well, and what you just said there to me was the biggest factor is when you consider the Saints, their first four possessions, they don't pick up a first down. Brees throws a horrible interception. You know what? Believe it or not, I wanted to transition into starting to talk about the defense first because I think there's so many positives there, but yet it just seems like the negative stuff, and I just don't want to turn this into a gloom and doom. So before I start asking some questions, at least from my own perspective, I want to set the table of saying, hey, look, there were times, and I rewatched the game this morning, everybody knows, or maybe they don't. Maybe they don't realize, or maybe the thing that bothers me is when people say, next man up. Look, the next man up is not Michael Thomas, okay? So just because you put a helmet on, just because you practice, doesn't mean that you're good enough to make a difference. And the fact is, Drew Brees, while he did look very rusty, there was nobody to throw to. Looking at the game film, now, I will say this. I didn't have the All-22. It's not released until later in the week. So just looking at it from TV, there were times where Brees threw some bad passes. Matter of fact, he should have easily had three interceptions. There was a deep ball. The one he did have, there was one in the end zone that Tyrann Mathieu dropped. And then there was another one on the left sideline where we had a receiver actually had a step and He underthrew it just enough where the defensive back got both hands on it and dropped it. But having said that, it was frustrating because I feel like the offensive line held up pretty well. But then there weren't playmakers. So, Heath, where do we start? Let's just go ahead and talk offense. What were the things that stood out the most to you that we can start a conversation with?
Well, I mean, besides for Drew Brees' play, one thing that to me is that early in the game, I wish the Saints had run the ball more. You know, they came out, and I think even it was you that commented during the game, whoever came up with this game plan of throwing on every down, early, especially when it's not going so well, right?
You know? Right.
And the Saints were able to run the ball. You know, I mean, they weren't ripping off 20 yards at a run, but I mean, it wasn't like they couldn't move the ball at all running. And I wish they would have relied on that a little bit more. You know, we went in it before this game, I talked about using the run game to keep as a defense, you know, to keep Kansas City's offense off the field. And then in the end, what did it wind up? Kansas City had the ball, what? Some ridiculous amount of time.
41 minutes and 14 seconds.
Yeah, I knew Wesley'd have it.
Yeah. So, you know, and I think that speaks for itself. And so, you know, that was one other thing besides for the fact that Drew Brees didn't play well. Now, I didn't have the perception, like you said, watching it on TV, it's hard to get a feel for whether or not anybody was really getting open or not.
Yes.
And so from that standpoint, I just wish they had set the tone a little bit different earlier in the game by running the ball a little more.
Okay, Wesley, I bet you heard the comments by Sean Payton about the run game and why we didn't run the ball more. What's your take on this, on the way the Saints, the game plan that they came to this game with?
I mean, these, you look at the stats, and this is a game that we're losing by 20 points. I mean, 17 rushes, 34 pass attempts plus a sack, so 35 dropbacks for passes and 17 rushes. That's a game that the only excuse you have for that is, oh, well, we were losing by 28 points, so we had to throw the ball. The rushing the ball 17 times in an NFL game is just ridiculous, especially when we are proven we can run the ball and we weren't having a lot of success, but like he said, we didn't really commit to it. And then Drew was not having a good game. You've got to do something. I don't understand. His excuse doesn't make sense to me.
I'm going to throw in there Kansas City Chiefs, the number 26 run defense in the league. So I do understand that when you run the ball and you're not converting on third downs, you don't have as many plays. Because in general, if you look at how many offensive plays we ran versus how many they ran, we didn't have the ball a lot. And that to me is like, okay, so I feel like we're just going to bounce around here anyway. How it affects the defense who played so well. And then you say, well, did they really play well? When if you take into consideration over 90 plays, absolutely they played well. And then also take into consideration that the Saints offense went 3-and-out. Now, I watched and I started to write this stuff down. I got sidetracked because we had the whole Davenport thing. So I went into the game watching it, trying to come up with – I wanted to look at the stats because, again, 4 opening drives, 3-and-out. But when you look at how the Saints scored, there wasn't even one of the scoring drives. It was a penalty, a pass interference penalty, and a roughing the passer penalty on that drive that put them in a position where they didn't move the ball down the field. Against the 15th-ranked defense in the league, the Saints were not able to consistently move the ball down the field except when – Kansas City was playing, I hate calling it prevent, but they were playing cover 4. They were basically saying, hey, look, we'll give you everything underneath. And the Saints moved the ball down the field and scored. So even when you look at the score and say we lost by 3, by the time we got the score cut down to 3, the chances of us getting the ball back and having a chance, it would have taken basically a miracle. So I just don't know. And again, okay, anything else you guys want to get out on offense and negative, because I want to start talking about some positive things, how I feel about going forward. So anything else, Heath, that you want to talk about? Not that we can't bring up some different things later, but right now, as far as offense goes, anything that you want to talk about?
No, just the lack of the running game and the overall game plan I didn't think was that great. Otherwise, you know, like, and except whether or not anybody was getting open. But like you said, we got so many injuries at the wide receiver. You know, we had three guys that were called up off the practice squad, and they're on the practice squad for a reason and not on the active roster. And so I guess it's not really all that surprising that when you go in a game in that situation, you're going to have that, you know, in Cook, Jared Cook. Now he finally did make a catch later in the game that was extremely important. So the one he did catch was probably the most important one that was thrown to him. But this guy has just disappeared, man. I mean, he frustrates me to death. It's like, and obviously he's not, I don't think he'll be back next year, but yeah, let's move on to something positive because I think everybody's well aware of all the negative.
Right. Well, Wesley, I want to give you a chance to kind of close out the negativity of this segment so far so that we can actually get to the future and the bright parts of what happened.
I'll say that the thing that concerns me is that I don't see this changing in the next two games. And here's the deal. I think that the Vikings and the Panthers are awful teams that we could play this exact same game against and probably beat them by 10 if with the way our defense played. Our defense was great. These teams are not going to score on that. Having said that, these wide receivers were not getting open. And I'm not making excuse for Drew Brees. Drew Brees had a terrible game. And he should have not thrown the ball to some of these people, and he could have had other check down routes. There's other things he could have done. But these receivers were getting no separation. Adam Trautman didn't even have a catch. And again, this is the guy that we think is going to replace Cook next year. And he's been this, you know, kind of a bright spot of somebody that looks like they could grow into a spot in the offense and didn't even have an attempt thrown his way. I'm really worried about our passing offense the next couple of weeks. I think that obviously if we get Michael Thomas and Deontay Harris back, that can help for the playoffs. But the next couple of weeks could be some ugly wins. I think that we can win against those teams that are pretty bad. But we need to run the ball. And on offense, I think that we could look bad passing the next couple of weeks.
Well, one of the things and what does worry me too going forward in these next two games and later on, we'll talk about some of the playoff implications, beating who and losing to who and how it could all work out. But yeah, the Saints, first thing I'm going to say is, I am literally extremely impressed with the Saints defense. Now you might say, and I know there are a couple of times when during the game, it's like, well, they just gave up another long conversion, man. When you have Mahomes back there doing the things he was doing under that kind of duress, you're not going to find a lot of quarterbacks who will overcome that and make a play. I'm not saying it doesn't happen every once in a while, because we do see guys that you have them, you think, yeah, and he throws them. Next thing you know, a guy's open. But Mahomes was doing it on just such a regular basis. But he was also taking a beating. I mean, I'm talking everybody from, obviously, Trey Hendrickson had a great game. Davenport was putting a lot of pressure on. And Cam Jordan played pretty well. Help me out.
Was that more putting pressure on the tackle or the guard?
Okay. Now, wait, what are you saying in this particular? You want to get into this conversation?
I'm just messing with you.
Granderson. And then there was also Onyemata. And then Rankins. I mean, just everybody was playing well on that defensive front. The thing about it is I have to ask the question, where is this every week? How come we playing teams that aren't that good and we give up a first drive touchdown to average teams? So, Heath, you have an answer for me? The people want to know.
You know, I guess those other – it could be a couple of things. I mean, obviously, they just might not be bringing it like that every week, or they didn't have the right game plan for that particular team. Or even though that team's not necessarily that good, doesn't mean that they aren't good up front at pass protection or whatever.
Sure.
But speaking of that, I think that's a testament to why this team held up as well as it did yesterday with that many defensive plays is the depth, right? The rotation.
Yes.
Especially along the front seven, or at least along the front line for sure. We got more defensive ends and tackles that we can rotate, and they were rotating them heavy yesterday. I mean, Cam Jordan spent a lot of time off the field before he spent the whole rest of the game off of the field. We could talk about that. But
right.
You know, so, yeah, I mean, it makes you wonder, though, because you look at the team on paper and, you know, we said early in the season and they came out and they looked horrible. And one of the things that they were doing at the beginning of the season that was so bad was they were giving up third and longs. They would play well on first down and second down, create a third and long, and then turn around and give up the third and long plus some. And that's kind of returned yesterday. Now, you're right. Mahomes is, you know, he's a hell of a quarterback, and he made a lot of really good plays. But that was early on. That was the big thing. I mean, they were playing well. They had Kansas City in a bunch of third and longs, especially early in the game. And, you know, they couldn't stop it on a third down and get off the field. And at a time when the offense wasn't helping them at all, well, then you turn around and you can't get yourself off the field, and that's how you wind up playing 96 plays on defense.
All right. Now, Wesley, do you have well, to me, I don't know. Heath, you make me start reconsidering stuff because I am grading them off of a curve. I'm grading them off of playing Kansas City. I'm grading them off of what I saw. I saw what I thought to be pretty good coverage. I saw pressure. I saw guys getting after him. He's running all over the place. Nobody was sitting back in the pocket just picking us apart. But at the end of the day, they did. They converted third and longs. I mean, Wesley.
I think it's proper to give the defensive credit. And so the defense has really had two bad games this year. One where we just decided not to cover Oakland's tight end. No, I'm sorry, Oakland. Las Vegas's tight end for the entire game.
Right.
And then the game against the Eagles. To be fair, and then me and you were talking about this last night, Dave. Yesterday, Hurts throws for 338 yards, three touchdowns, no interceptions, runs for 63 yards, and scores a touchdown. He might be a good quarterback. That's kind of exciting. And, I mean, it was kind of, I think, difficult to watch tape on Carson Wentz for the Eagles all year and necessarily game plan for that.
Right.
Obviously, Dennis Allen has done a good job this year. I don't like giving him compliments any more than Heath does. he's done a good job this year with his in-game adjustments. It's weird to me that you can watch 10 games from a team for all a year, but you make some of those adjustments till after the first drive of the game, which is kind of weird. He's been making good in-game adjustments. And then I also think that the pressure that our defensive line has put on the quarterback does wear them out. I think that pressure's been there even when they weren't getting good numbers in sacks.
Yeah, I think that that's one of the things you have to consider, too, is that while the Saints seem to tighten it up or whatever, but, I mean, you also got to give at some point, you know, you're just wearing them out. I mean, I don't know, man, but it seems like they just – that's why I think I'm so impressed is that they just kept coming. Later in the game, they were still coming with pressure. I mean, they had one where Granison and Hendrickson just met at the quarterback. I mean, I felt bad for old Mahomes there. So, I don't know. To me, in my mind – I think it's one of the most impressive defensive showings that we've had.
I'll throw this out there too. Like, as bad as the game went and all, I think that if Chauncey Gardner-Johnson doesn't get injured and miss 20 plays, he missed 20 plays. If he didn't miss 20 plays, I think we win this game. I think he was a difference maker of what he was doing, of covering in the slot, whether he was on helping double Hill or whether he was taking Kelsey. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson had a great game when he was in there and was in the middle of all kinds of stuff and annoying receivers. He made a great play on a guy catching a ball, and Patrick Mahomes made a great throw to get over him. And that wasn't bad coverage, but then the way Johnson recovered and stripped the ball out, that guy can be a difference maker on defense. And him missing 20 plays, I think, matters against a team like the Chiefs.
And that was a strange play because watching a replay, you know, like I thought the way he tackled, but when you saw the replay, he went in with a shoulder. He got – like the heel kicked in the face. And so him missing 20 plays because, again, I watched it a couple of times. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to act like it didn't hurt. But, I mean, it wasn't really a concussion type play. It was more like a foot to the face. And I don't know. I'm like, hey, man, it's a foot to the face. Get up and play some ball. But, you know, Gardner-Johnson has been playing very well the last few weeks. And he's the guy who gets tested probably more than anybody else on defense, honestly. And, you know, look, he gives up some plays, but at the end of the day, he makes his fair share of plays. I mean, he makes a lot of plays.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, he has been a big difference maker. You know, he kind of turned it on right about the same time that we acquired Alexander. And those two guys combined between them, I think, are a big part of the difference in, you know, the difference in, we've seen in the defense. And it was right after he went out, P.J. Williams came in and got burned on a play, like shortly after Gardner Johnson went out. And so it just makes it that much more evident. You know, sometimes what is that? Sometimes you don't really notice the guy until he leaves and his replacement comes. Then you see how bad.
Right. If you remember, it wasn't that long ago where P.J. Williams, we were like, oh, my God, man, somebody's going to sign him. You know, and he had the driving while intoxicated charges, and it kind of he didn't get any contract offers. We brought him back, but at that time we were like, man, this guy, he's a good slot corner. And until you get somebody good, you don't realize what good is.
Yeah.
You know, you watch him, it's just, I mean, I don't know. This is where, okay, so I'm a transition into going forward, and I know we're gonna have a tough row to hoe because we're going to struggle on offense. I made the comment yesterday to a group of friends, and I said, man, we need to fix this offense. We need to fix it. And I took a lot of crap over it, and I just don't know any other way to say it. Now, they were like, well, yeah, with all the injuries. Well, injuries are part of fixing it. One way or another, we have to get the people, because the playoffs aren't going to stop because the Saints aren't healthy. And that history has proven that. So we need to fix these problems. At first, the last few weeks we've been having a noticeable problem in interior offensive line. We seem to have adjusted, and we're doing pretty well in pass blocking. Now all of a sudden we have some injured receivers. We finally get Breeze back, but he's not going to rust off. I'm very confident in Breeze, and I feel like it probably was the best decision to make to say, look, we're not going anywhere with a 70% Michael Thomas. So where am I? Wesley, the Saints and their decision to put Michael Thomas on, who wasn't playing poorly, but the reoccurring theme was, he wasn't the same Michael Thomas. Smart idea, bad idea?
I think incredibly smart idea. I think that it is a showing the commitment here is not to make the playoffs. It's not to win the number one seed. It's not to get the number two seed. The commitment here is to win the Super Bowl this year. And going into this weekend, road teams have a better – than home teams. They were two games above 500. And Sean Payton has talked about that a few times the last few weeks, that he doesn't think that road and away matters or home and road matters as much. I think that they know that in order to win the Super Bowl, Michael Thomas has to be healthy. And him doing this nagging injury, apparently what's been happening is he's been taking Wednesday off, Thursday kind of half practicing, Friday practicing, playing well on Sunday, but then Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday just pain again. And I think that the fear is going down that road too many weeks in a row is going to lead to him just missing the rest of the season. And there sounds like there's a commitment that they say that he could have played this week. They could have kept doing that, but giving him 3 weeks off almost assures he comes back at near 100%, not 85%. Like, this is going to get him better. If we can win the next couple weeks and stay in the number two seed, and you know, it's either way, it's the smart move, because again, the goal is to win the Super Bowl, not to make the playoffs, not to finish some sort of playoff seeding, and not even really worried about necessarily how many home games we play.
Okay, so Heath, looks like the team that we will be matched up in the playoffs is more than likely the NFC West, and these guys are all playing each other: the 49ers, the Rams, Seattle, and Arizona are all playing each other in the last two games of the season. So who we're going to play, we don't know. And the fact of the matter, it looks like we have to win at least one of the last two games, not only to win our division, because we need to talk about Tampa Bay and their win over Atlanta and that debacle, but we need to win at least one of the last two games. It kind of feels like we're going in hobble, but is the bigger picture more important?
Well, I think it is. You know, at the end of the day, especially this year, like what Wesley just said, we can see that home and away basically means nothing. And it's pretty obvious, you know. You got to make it, right? You got to get there. That's the most important thing. After that, you'll have your chance to take care of your business. And so, I guess that's exactly how the Saints are looking at it. Let's get everybody healthy and just, you know, I hope, you know, well, only one team gets a bye now. That changes everything, too. As far as the West goes, if we want, you know, unfortunately, I haven't really paid that much attention to those teams. I know Arizona's been up and down. Just about the time you think they turn it on and become
right,
you know, then they lose to somebody horrible or whatever. And Seattle hasn't looked quite as good lately as they did earlier in the season. And San Francisco, I'm not even sure how they're kind of still in it. They're doing a pretty good job of coaching out there, considering they're missing quarterbacks and everything else, and somehow they're still in it. But I don't know if it matters which one we play, you know, honestly. I mean, I'll be honest with you, I probably least prefer to play Arizona just because we don't know as much about them, and I think Kyler Murray could give us problems.
BS and Beer Podcast, the worldwide leader in absolutely nothing.
All right, we're back with Wesley Coleman and Heath Elson-San. I'm Dave Romero. You're listening to the BS and Beer Podcast. Let's talk more about the playoffs and the situation there. You know, Heath, earlier you were mentioning, I don't know if the 49ers are actually still in it, but they're still playing strong, which they could play spoilers. And what's ironic about it is, you know, I'll be the first one to tell you, just because a guy puts on a uniform, you know, he's not the same player. So the whole next man up thing has never really resonated with me. But I will say this, the 49ers are a Super Bowl roster. Just because you lose your superstars, if you fall apart because of that, then you really weren't that great of a team to begin with. And the 49ers have a good team. They don't have their starting quarterback, which you can argue was their starting quarterback ever a big cog in that team anyway. So they have a good offensive line. They have a good defense. They have a good defensive line. They lost that impact player in Bosa. So the only reason I'm talking about them really is just to point out that they're still a good team and they can beat you. They just they need some help. They have to have somebody make a few mistakes. Speaking of that, one of the teams that I was most worried about is the Rams, because, again, the Saints with their issues with the interior pass rush. Now, all of a sudden, you have the Rams who have a good interior pass rush. But that kind of – my stress was alleviated a bit yesterday when they lost to the Rams. Wesley, what do you make of it?
Man, how the Rams could lose that game and why the Jets would win that game makes absolutely no sense. It's looking like now that the Jets are going to have the number two pick now, which is just – is absolutely insane that they would win that game, but one that they did. I'm not a Jared Goff apologist at all. Like, I think he got exposed after his first year. He had all that, you know, when it came out, people were saying that it was pretty obvious McVay was making the reads for him and all, and they were getting up to the line real fast. And the defense just started messing around with that by standing around and moving their guys around. And I'm not sure if Jared Goff is for what is a great offensive roster and even a pretty good defensive roster on the Rams. Jared Goff is not the gas pedal that can make that go.
Yeah, I'm significantly less concerned about them as I was. But having said that, look, we lost to the Eagles a couple of weeks ago, Heath. Now, having said that, we didn't have our starting quarterback. We had some injuries. As much as we want to say, oh, you come out there and it looks like Hurts, I don't want to crown him as a great quarterback, but the point is it looks like he's not a bad quarterback. And when you have no film and you don't really know what to expect, you don't necessarily come in with the right game plan and they get a cut, they score on you. And then you don't have the offensive firepower because you have your backup quarterback to get back into the game. But the Rams lose, and I kind of went off on a tangent there, but now you have the Rams, you have, let's see, the Cardinals, and you also have Seattle. Who would you most like to see in the first round of the playoffs if you had a choice, Heath?
Out of those three teams right now?
Yes, sir. Looks like they're the most likely.
I mean, the way they all look right now, I'd probably rather play the Rams. That said, we have a little bit of a history with the Rams that, you know, kind of gives me that little bit of pause in the background and think, well, you know, we've been able to handle Seattle. Maybe I'd rather play Seattle. I don't know. I think the Rams, to me, the Rams were surprising up until this point that they, because they got gutted with free agency and stuff. I really didn't expect the Rams to actually be as good as they had been.
Agreed.
And so I really just think the Rams are kind of going back, getting back to what I thought they were going to be. I agree with Wesley. I'm not sold on Jared Goff. And yeah, I think McVay's a hell of a coach. And I think that's the only reason why the Rams are where they are right now. Arizona's the one that scares me just because of Murray. We have trouble with that kind of quarterback. And if Jalen Hurts can hurt you with his legs and all, Murray could really hurt you. The problem with Arizona is they've just been up and down, right? Which is, you know, it's kind of unexpected. I mean, he's a young quarterback, and there's going to be some inconsistency there. But, man, they're scary if they're on, you know.
Well,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, Heath, what's scary is that when the Saints are winning, you're like, I'm not worried about any of those guys. You lose two games in a row, and all of a sudden, everybody's scary, right?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Hurts may turn out to be better than we would have expected. It's not that I didn't think Hurts is, you know, I saw what he did in college. I mean, the dude's obviously got some ability. I didn't expect him to do it in his first start necessarily, and especially against the Saints defense. And the rest of the Eagles team, when you look at everything, you know, they've seriously depleted. But I think it's part him, and I also think with the Saints, you know, it was game planning, right? Not expecting him necessarily. It was the fact that he actually played well, and I also think the team was invigorated, right? They've been getting beat for a while. You can see that the team was excited to have a change, and I think that the team played above their head as well, and I think all of that added together is kind of what happened.
Absolutely.
And then we didn't have a great game, you know. Taysom Hill didn't have a great game, so, you know, I don't know.
Has he ever?
Well, he's opening up Pandora's box here. So there's something else too, Wesley. Speaking of that, and Jameis Winston goes on the COVID-19 reserve list Sunday morning. You know, puts the Saints. Imagine if Breeze, if they'd have said, "Look, let's take one more week." That would have been an interesting situation.
Yeah, I mean, going into depending on if – I don't think we've heard yet if he showed any symptoms. If he didn't show any symptoms, then he will be back on the roster for maybe Friday. But if he showed symptoms, he's definitely not going to be on the roster for Friday. So that kind of factors in too. I was surprised by how often we tried to use Taysom Hill. I mean, he was out there even on the special teams play. I really worried – that they were going to back off from him at the last minute when all that happened with Winston. But, and Breeze took a few shots. He seemed to take it well. I guess one thing we didn't talk about was how Breeze, did say afterwards that he admitted that he was definitely less than 100%. He was in pain the whole game, but he didn't sound like he was at all, like, regretting that he played. He's like, yeah, I'm just working through it. Like,
Is it unfair to say – maybe it's just my expectations. I never went into this game expecting to win it. Now, had we had a healthy team and everything ready to go, yes, I think I feel like I'd have gone into the game ready to win if Breeze had never gotten hurt, if Michael Thomas was healthy. But going into the game, I didn't really expect to win the game. And I guess part of it, too, is that I didn't expect the Breeze to be starting anyway. But based on the circumstances, I'm not extremely disappointed. Maybe that's why I'm not so upset with the – because I do trust the offense to get back, you know, get theirself together. But they need to do it. So let's talk a little bit, Heath, about the next two games, okay? So we have the Vikings on Christmas Day on a short week. Then we have Carolina to close the season out. Tampa Bay is on our heels, and if we – we only need to win one more to win the division. But, man, the second seed is not locked up.
No. I mean, you know, these two losses, we've let Tampa come back to it. We fell back to the field, I guess what I'm trying to say. We have a team next week. First of all, dome sweet dome don't mean nothing right now. You know, playing a Superdome means absolutely nothing. So, you know, and we got a team next week that we have a horrible history with over the last few games in Minnesota, right? Just the bugaboo with that team as far as some of the stuff we've had with them. So, I think the Saints are a better team. I don't think Minnesota is necessarily a good, but I think the Saints were the better team the last two times we lost to them.
Right.
And so, that's the only thing with that. It's a little bit of superstition there or whatever, I guess, if you want to, but it makes me queasy to have to play the Vikings.
Well, Panthers, I think that – oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, because the thing about it is the Saints aren't the Saints right now. because we're going to have to rely on our defense, which means that the game will not be out of hand. Chances of us having a nice lead is going to be pretty slim. We're not going into this thing where we're going to score a bunch of points until we get some players back healthy. So we better hope that the defense – now, I'll say this too, Heath, the special teams showed up. Now, I don't know where to go. Our coverage units did. Man, Morstead is just not the same punter anymore. I mean, at first it was like, oh, he just had a bad game. Now it's pretty evident that there's a reason why the Saints kept two punters on the roster.
Yeah. When you consider his performance this year and what he makes, I think he's very good chance that he's a cap casualty next year.
He's not getting paid $4.5 million next year to be an average.
No, he can't. Especially if the cap is going to be cut any amount at all, then you definitely can't. But, look, I mean, the special teams are historically a strength of this team. And so, man, I tell you what, there was one play. I don't know if y'all noticed it, but
JT Gray tackle was amazing.
He stuck with that play and chased that guy sideways after being held and everything. That just shows you why that guy – for years, we wondered, how does JT Gray keep staying on a roster until it became so obvious now that between him and Hardy, those guys are just the first two guys on the scene every time without fail. And thank God. I mean, and they've been a big difference in the – between them and then the other side with Lutz, right? That was a huge turnaround after struggling in special teams for the Saints for a long time. Go ahead, Wes.
People lost their mind when we cut Boston Scott to keep JT Gray.
Yes.
Yeah.
Into the practice squad. Like, people lost their mind of what are we doing? And then, now, I mean, Boston Scott's going on been a pretty decent running back in Philadelphia. But, I mean, JT Gray has made great plays over the past three seasons. It's been watching him. And then, I mean, the way Hardy plays on the other, those two guys are unblockable by whoever's over there on special teams on either side. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, JT Gray has been not just Hardy and JT Gray. With those two guys on the field, your coverage units are in good hands, difference makers. Maybe not such great hands if you're talking about Alex Anzalone. He's caught a lot of crap for an opportunity to fall on the ball. I personally – listen, of course, I'm disappointed, but – listen, it is not easy to do that. And when you're running as fast as that guy is and the rest of I'm trying to cut him some slack.
Listen, it is never as simple as going, we lost by three, that's a 4-point swing.
Absolutely. No, that's not what I'm saying.
No, I know you're not saying that. But we lost by three and that's a 4-point swing. I mean.
Not saying, just saying.
I know the entire game plays out differently if those scores, just like when you kick one versus kicking, going for two. I mean, everything, the whole rest of the game after that plays out differently.
Heath, you've been working out, dieting, you lost some weight. Do you think you could have got that ball?
No, I'm not even going to try to act like I could. Every play I watch, I think, God, I'd be dead on that play. Like, I would never get back up again.
So I think any armchair athlete, they just don't have an appreciation. Because one of the things I'll say, and this is somewhat different, but, like whenever you're running down the field, you have pads, shoulder pads on, you have a helmet, face mask, and you're running 4-3, and your head's doing like this, and here comes the ball over your shoulder. To think that, oh, man, why didn't he catch that ball? Well, because he's a professional athlete. Same thing goes on that play. Yes, me and you could have fun. I have every confidence that if I'd have rolled that ball out there, Heath, that you'd have ran over there running about a 7 flat 40, fell on it, and you'd have had it no problem. But when you cut that 7 flat down to, like, 4-7, there's a lot of moving parts
out of control.
Somebody
hitting you from behind.
Right.
Well, are they going to get the ball before me? And, oh, my God, I'm scoring a touchdown.
Right. All those things are a factor.
You got a guy who lost his job to Alexander, and I'm sure he's eager to do anything, right? So the adrenaline was pumping even harder when he had a chance to make that play.
We gather that, like, you couldn't sub in for Anzalone and fall on the ball, but could you stand on the edge of the end zone and watch somebody run into the end zone and know it was a touchdown? If you missed it on replay and say it was a touchdown after, New York and ask Keith, could you do that?
Well, look, first of all, I'm very adept at falling. Okay? That part, and you'd have had an even better chance if you rolled a meatball out there. But besides for that, I definitely could have stood on the sideline and told him that was a freaking touchdown.
What in the world is going on with these? I don't want to be the Saints guy saying these referees, but man, these referees.
And you know what? And it's not just the Saints, man. It was more egregious in the game that I watched before it in Tampa and Atlanta. Yep. There was a couple of plays in that calls in that game that I still can't, including the final, what wound up being the end of the game. Not that it would have necessarily mattered. I certainly wasn't expecting Atlanta to snatch victory from the jaws of defeat. The bottom line is that there's no way in hell the guy picked up the first down there. I mean, it just the announcers knew it.
Yeah.
Blandino knew it. Everybody watching the game outside of Tampa fans knew it. And yet, you know, I don't know.
But you know what?
I get that you can't throw a punch in an NFL game, but how do you, with 1 second, watch a guy get his jersey almost ripped off of his body, and you don't see that, you don't throw a flag, and then you look up as the guy hit. And again, from the replay from the back, the guy turned his head like he got hit in the face. From the other angle, it looked like Cam hit him in the shoulder/chest area.
Yeah, that was hand fighting, man.
But what? I mean, Cam's his jersey's getting ripped off of his body.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
And just for a minute, I hate to go back to the other game.
But yeah, y'all don't want to be that guy, but go ahead, please.
Yeah. So I'll get started. No, look, the play where I mean, the guy got blocked in the back on a punt into, I think it was, yeah, it was a Falcon.
Yes, I remember that play.
Yeah.
He gets blocked in the back. He's stumbling forward and hits the guy with the top of his helmet because he's falling. All right. They even call a penalty on the Tampa player for blocking him in the back. And then turn around and give the guy a penalty for hitting him with his helmet. There was nothing else the guy could do. I mean, it's like, you know, if you get blocked into the kicker, they don't throw the flag. So why are they throwing the flag? You just got blocked in the. I don't know. I can't with the officials anymore, man.
Well, the irony in that Heath is that you're right. If you get blocked into the kicker, or in other situations where you're blocked, it's generally kind of like, hey, no holds bar. After that, it's not your fault. And that particular situation was. I mean, it's just ridiculous. And the thing about it is, you know, like in most conspiracy theories, you know, the whole conspiracy includes a bunch of other people. But like back to that Tampa Bay first down thing, they show the video of the referee like literally sliding the ball like 6 or 8 inches forward. and even the announcer's like, look right there. Right. Look what he's doing. And they're just like a mafia style. I don't care if you see me. You didn't see what you just saw. They just do it anyway.
The worst part is, even with moving the ball, when they showed the shot of the chains, it looked like it was half inch short anyway.
Right.
Yeah. Well, the announcer goes, I guess that yellow line's not really isn't accurate.
Right. So
he says it afterward.
He was the chain gang, apparently.
Now the thing about
official.
It is,
he goes, we just talk about that yellow line really isn't official.
But you know, the yellow line's not official. But let me ask you guys this: have you ever seen it be inaccurate?
No, never. The yellow line was exactly in the right spot. You could tell by the number, the zero on the yard line. Like, there was no way he got anywhere near. It was at least a half a yard short, you know. And it's like, for God's sake, man. I mean, yeah. But if you're making a bang-bang call in the old days before replay and all, you go, you're not going to get them all right, okay? Nobody likes it, but nobody's perfect and all. But you have the opportunity to watch it from multiple angles in super slow-mo. And you're talking with somebody else in the headquarters that's looking at it and everything, and you still get it wrong. And it's like, this just can't happen in an enterprise like the NFL, man. This ain't peewee football. This is billions upon billions upon billions of dollars.
Like, I feel like this is digressed into a bitch session, but what about Drew Brees drops back to pass, Cooks goes, runs, and stops his route, and Brees throws the ball downfield, gets called for intentional grounding. Listen, as I was watching the game again this morning, I didn't even remember this, but there was a play where Henderson drove his man right into Mahomes, and Mahomes launches it downfield. Nobody anywhere, even in the screen, nothing. And that's the part that drives me crazy, is that when you get called for the exact same thing the other team didn't get called for, it's hard to deal with. And
then the other side of it, which drives me just as insane, is missing throwing a flag. We get third down. One of our receivers gets wiped out by a safety. They throw the flag, and then they come back. There's no penalty for that.
Why is
there a yellow flag on the field? If there's no penalty, I mean, they didn't even group together. They just, like, just changed their mind.
Yeah.
Yes, that is here's the irony in it. Let's see if I have it here. Let's see if I can get this. I don't know if you could hear that, but as I listen, I don't feel like I have all the equipment to do the very best high-tech capture of video, and yet I use my phone on my iPad. But when that guy did it, I'm like, that's going to be my new meme, is just the referee walking up. There is no penalty for pass interference. Fourth down. Yeah, so yes, very aware of that. All right. Before we start talking about our families and problems with our relationships, let's close it out here. Heath, I'll start with you. Kind of give me a big picture, you know, spend a minute giving a big picture where we're at. We have two games left. We're a little banged up. You know, we're trying to manage this roster into the playoffs. What are you thinking about everything right now?
I think you pretty well just summed it up.
All right, well, we'll talk to you next week. Oh, I'm sorry, go
ahead. No, I mean, look, the bottom line is, you know, we got a bad taste in our mouth right now, right? We have two losses in a row. And to some extent, both of them, you know, they were ugly, right, in one way or another. And I think next week, you know, look, I hate Minnesota, and it, you know, but I think the Saints will play a lot better next week. Drew Brees will have a whole nother week of practice. They were just out of sync. He was – between the fact that he hasn't been playing and the fact that he had a bunch of guys on the field that he's not normally throwing to on a regular basis anyway, there was some timing and sync issues going on yesterday, some rust on Brees. I think he'll, you know, on the flip side, the positive is the defense got to be feeling really good about themselves, right? I mean, they pulled it back together. They're going to go into the game with some momentum. I think the offense will play better. We should be able to beat both Minnesota and Carolina. Carolina is not a very good team at all. In fact, I see now they're mocking the BYU quarterback to Carolina to replace Teddy Bridgewater already, all the experts. But, you know, we should be able to win both of those games and hold on to where we are and get into the playoffs. And then get our guys back, man. We get, you know, we missing, you know, Thomas, you know, Harris, he's important, man. He makes a big difference on special teams, you know. And he was starting to really become an integral part of the offense with a few things that he could do on offense that I was excited about. So it's not just Thomas. Some other people we need to get back. I was encouraged yesterday to see Rankins play really well.
Yes.
You know, he was another guy with the injuries and just kind of not, you know, he popped a lot yesterday, and that was good to see. Just really, I'm excited about the rotation that we have on the defensive line, man. I mean, we got a bunch of really good players on the defensive line. And they should be able to keep us in just about anything just by the fact that we can rotate. I mean, when you can rotate guys in and keep fresh legs on a defensive line like you do with running backs and all, that's a hell of a position to be in on it, you know. And we can do that. Granderson, man. Granderson's progression is looking really good. He did a hell of a job taking over for Cam Jordan yesterday primarily. So I don't know, man. As bad as it's looked over the last couple of weeks, there's a lot to be positive about with this team. They are a really good team. We just don't have all of the pieces together right now. And it always sucks when you got everybody talking, boy, the Saints are gelling at the right time of the year. This is the best team in the NFL. And then you have two stinkers like Philadelphia and yesterday. And then all of a sudden, you know, like you said, everybody's off the bandwagon. We feeling bad. The experts have done forgot about the Saints already. And they'll get it back together, you know.
You know what? Maybe this is a good thing. Last year we went into the playoffs thinking that we were – right now we're – you know, hey, here's that crisis that Coach Payton's always talking about. And one thing before I go to Wesley with the same question is, I think any other team that's not Mahomes with all those playmakers on offense, we probably forced a couple of, if not two or three turnovers yesterday if we were playing an average quarterback, like, you know, like the kid in Minnesota or the kid in Bridgewater, you know, I think that we will find some short fields here in the next 2 weeks. While I'm a little concerned about our offense till we get healthy, I do believe that that defense would have been good for a couple of turnovers yesterday, the way they were swarming the ball, the way that the defensive line was getting after the quarterback. Same question to you, Wesley. Give me kind of your state of the union right now going into the last 2 weeks of the season.
So I preface this by saying I take for granted that we're going to win at least one of the last two games of the season just by being way more talented than both the teams we play. Winning one of those two games is going to give us the second seed in the playoffs. Having said that, these next two games are really our preseason for the playoffs. We've got our people that are trying to get healthy so they can be back for the playoffs. We've got some kinks that we need to work out, but we really need to keep everybody healthy, work on Breeze getting better, and just getting Michael Thomas back. Again, I look at these as two preseason games.
The person who sits here is but the most conspicuous member of a superb team of journalists, writers, reporters, editors, producers, and none of that will change. Furthermore, I'm not going away. I'll be back.
And that's the way it is.
Oh, why don't waste time to tune into our podcast? Oh, go give your time to David, Heath, and Thomas. We do this every week. Every Wednesday, so long. So dumb.